You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
Life's amazing, isn't it? Because it's kind of things come along that aren't so good and things come along that are good. And the only thing I've learned is that when the good things come along, appreciate it. Because a bad thing will come along anyway. And so you might as well enjoy the good things when the good things come.
But before all of that...
This episode of the NetMums podcast is brought to you by Aldi. Wendy, I've got a question for you. What's your guilty parenting pleasure?
Oh, I'd probably say it's gobbling up cold fish fingers from my kids' plates after they've abandoned dinner in favour of watching the telly.
I do that too. I reckon my guilty pleasure is sneaking out and escaping my children to have a lovely browse of my local Aldi alone.
I am so with you. What I love about Aldi is they have an excellent range of great value products. They even have an award-winning baby and toddler range, which includes weaning essentials, nappies and wipes.
It's funny you should say that because another friend told me that she switched to Aldi Mamiya and it's giving her big savings.
Yes, plus with NetMums and Aldi, new parents can get a pack of newborn nappies absolutely free. So log on to our site and let your friends know about this awesome opportunity with NetMums and Aldi.
Right, don't tell my family, but I'm sneaking off to Aldi right now.
Oh, hello, hello, welcome to a new episode. Now, I have to prepare you for a slightly ranty episode. I think... it's the end of the summer holidays when we are recording this podcast. Alison and I have done the juggle. We've survived the juggle. We have got between us two twins starting primary school and one child starting secondary school in the next 3 or 4 days. Tensions are high. Alcohol consumption is high. And we've got a lovely guest who we're hoping is going to understand our woes. Alison, what do you reckon?
I reckon she will, because a little birdie has told me that she has got a big child starting university soon. So I think that she's going to feel our pain. So joining us today on the podcast is someone who has been on our telly screens for years, sharing her wisdom on buying and renovating property. Sarah Beeny's new book, The Simple Life, sees her share her stories and experiences from parenting her 4 sons to work-life balance. So I feel like she's going to have some pearls of wisdom for us today. And also building the home of their dreams in Somerset and her cancer diagnosis and treatment. Sarah, a warm welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me. That's very kind.
Now, I did think you might be swigging a beer there, Sarah.
Well, to be honest, I'm tempted to have a beer, but it is before midday. So that's, you know, even though somewhere in
it's 12:11, it's well past the yard arm.
I could get rid of I'll get rid of my Diet Coke and get a beer now. I realise it's 11 minutes past 12. Well past.
We give you permission. So as I mentioned in the intro, your eldest, Billy, is off to university soon, isn't he, Sarah?
He is, yeah, which is you know, that's kind of quite a massive thing because he's 19. And although, you know, so he was going to university and in my head I was going to have this kind of simplified life, wrote a book about it, show how much I really will have a simple life. And then just as everything was sort of calm and serene and he was going off to university, it was all going to be calm and serene. Obviously, I'd be a blubbing mess because he'd be leaving for university, obvs. But then they decided, my sons and my husband decided to have a rock band. So they now have a rock band, which means he is going to university. But they won a competition to play at Glastonbury. They've got another song that's out on Friday. They were recording a video last night till like 3 in the morning. They've literally turned into, just as it all was sorted out, this kind of grenade came in from the kids and my husband looked at it, went pow, pow. And now, yeah, so he is off to university, but he hasn't got Thresher's week. He's got Thresher's hour because he's coming back to play a gig that night.
And they're like, oh no! Well.
So it's not a very, he's not only there for an hour or two and then he's got to come back because he's in a band with his brothers. And then they're going on tour in the autumn. So he's only he can go to university, but only for Monday night and Thursday night.
How does that feel having sons in a rock band? Like, are you slightly worried they're going to really embrace the rock lifestyle and all of the shit that comes with a rock lifestyle? Well, or are you just super proud and loving the fact that they've just played Glastonbury?
Well, playing Glastonbury is quite a big deal, isn't it?
It's pretty
exciting
cool.
And really cool. So, So before that, they played at Carfest, and then they played, they won this competition, played Glastonbury, and then they played Boomtown. Now, that was quite scary because I hadn't been to Boomtown, and I don't know if you've been to Boomtown, but it's quite kind of full of cool people. And as I walked through, I was like, ooh, blimey, this is very cool. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not... Like, you know, it would the safer things to do, but there are more dangerous things to do as well. So I mean, it's pretty cool to be, I'm going to be really honest. And they're really good. You know, their music is really good and they're, you know, charting really well on Spotify. And yeah, you know, life's amazing, isn't it? Because it's kind of things come along that aren't so good and things come along that are good. And the only thing I've learned is that when the good things come along, appreciate it, because a bad thing will come along anyway. And so you might as well enjoy the good things when the good things come. And right now, it might be meaning that our entire family is a little bit more chaotic than it was, but it is good.
I love the name of your son's rock band. Is it the entitled mm-hmm. Sons?
Yes, yeah. They named them.
Who came up with that name? I just think it's so genius.
Well, they did because they said, you know, we had the TV show that was on, and people kept like they'd look at social media when the you know the show was on and. Most people are really lovely, actually, but the odd person go, oh, they're so entitled. And so the boys just said, well, are we going to call our band that? We're just going to call it that and then just get in there first. You know, they're going to say it anyway. So so they just thought that they'd, like, you know, address the elephant in the room, which is what, you know, not many people. I mean, they work really hard. I mean, they do, I reckon, probably 15, 20 hours as practice a week, and then they play a gig most weeks. And so it's not like it's easy. It's not easy, but they are very privileged children. And so I think they just thought they'd get in there first. And it does shut people up because when they
Well, there's no messing, is there? It's like, well, we know. Yeah, how old's the youngest one then?
He's 13.
So he's in a rock band at 13.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. He's the one I worry about most, which is why he has to go to school, because like at 13, I think at 19, you kind of had, you know, you could be in a rock band at 19 and be like normal. But at 13, I'm like, no, he's got to go to school and, you know, like then run out of fish fingers. And he'd be told that he can't have fish fingers. He's got to have like, you know, a sausage instead. And, you know, all that stuff, like, you know, and someone to tell him it's like you need to be a teenager in school with everyone else, don't you?
Well, and also do the things that will stand you in good stead if being in a rock band doesn't work out, right?
Well, there is that. Although they don't contemplate that as a possibility.
Of course not.
But I'm kind of like, I mean, I basic reading and writing skills, that's always useful.
Helpful.
Helpful in the supermarket when you're reading your shopping list.
Yeah, when you've run out of fish fingers and need a sausage.
Yeah, when you need, otherwise you could end up with something completely random that you weren't expecting. You know? But yeah, these are useful skills, reading, writing, all those things.
What does your youngest friends think? Because is he going to year 9 now? What do his friends think of him?
I mean, really, honestly, that's the weird thing, is it's sort of almost hard for him because I think his friends don't even know really what a rock band is. And so they just want to like be in the like football team or the rugby team, and he can't be in the rugby team or the football team because he has to miss all of the matches because his brothers tell him he's got to come home to record and practice. So they drive to school and pick him up. I'm like, no, you can't play that stupid match of like football or rugby. You've got to come home and record. So he misses all the matches, which is probably actually he would be best, you know, that's what they think would be cool at that age. And meanwhile, he has to come home and practice being in a rock band. But he does really enjoy it. It means he's quite grown up for his age, to be honest. So he is very grown up for his age.
So parenting four teenage boys then, Sarah, you must have seen it all over the years. What pearls of wisdom do you have that you can share with anyone listening who might have younger boys or even just a boy and they're just looking for a bit of advice?
Yeah, just stick to one boy. That would be...
might be a bit late for that.
Yeah. I mean, boys, well, someone said to me once that boys muck up your house and girls muck up your head. which is...
I've heard that one.
Which is true. But I guess also I suppose, you know, on a kind of slightly earnest point, don't sweat the kind of things that don't matter. I always remember my a gorgeous sister-in-law, and she had... So her son is my godson, but he's a bit older. And he was standing in his pants on the kitchen table, like, dancing. And I was like, I was looking at her thinking, I didn't have kids at the time, and I was thinking, is she going to like get him dressed or something? And she said, just pick your battles. I mean, you know, if he wants to dance the kitchen table in his pants, let him do it, because there's going to be another battle that I'm going to have to fight so hard, and that's one that he can just knock himself out and just look, sort it out. That's no problem. And so I have... I would say that if anyone has any kids, but particularly
boys. I think that works with girls. I've got two girls, and my husband is forever saying to me, no, pick your battles. That one's not worth fighting.
Yeah.
My daughter's soon to be 12, so we're just coming into, at 12, girls, your daughter is 12, isn't she, Alison? Girls.
Yeah, about to turn 13.
They're much older than boys at that age, and so we are fully into harumphing.
Yeah. I mean, it is complicated. My 13-year-old has embraced this sort of bad temperedness. Or he used to be utterly perfect, and now I keep going, oh, could you just like pass through this phase really fast, because it's really boring. but I suppose, you know, I would say these are the things I'd say is keep talking all the time. And I always worry about when I hear parents who don't tell the truth, don't talk, don't like keep the conversation going, because that's, you know, the stuff's going on anyway. You might think you're in control and you're like, no, my children would never go and do that. They are, actually. They're just not telling you. That's what's happening. So if they're not telling you, it's because you're actually just in denial. I sort of slightly rather know what's going on than them not tell me what's going on, because at least then when they come across something that really unsettles them and they're like, oh, how do I handle that? At least, you know, they don't have to go, oh, I can't talk to you about that because I sort of didn't tell you I was doing any of the, you know, what I mean, whatever it is, whether it's staying up late or, you know, whatever the thing is, you know, we just want them to be safe, don't we? Isn't that what all parents want?
Yeah.
And so they keep the conversation going. So talk, so that when that thing comes along, which it invariably does, but that really rocks their boat. And you have to remember, I always think children, they've got so little to worry about. You know, adults, we worry about like the mortgage and the fact we haven't got the car MOT'd and we've got to pay the car tax and we haven't, you know, done the, like the neighbours complained about something or another and we need to go and sort it out, and you haven't donated the village fete and you're rubbish and all those things we haven't done. And so we kind of like panic about all these things, whereas children have literally nothing to do. They don't even have to worry particularly about whether they've got any clean clothes, because it's sort of, because...
Well, they don't care if they're clean.
No, they don't care. That's true. They don't care about any of it. So they're busy like doing their thing. And so when a big thing happens to them, proportionately it's massive. You know, falling out with a friend who says they're a smelly poo is like, that's like 99% of their world has just been trashed because someone said they were a smelly poo. Whereas, you know, for adults like us, you just go,
I mean, probably am.
I mean, actually, we might cry, but, you know, it depends on the day. But
that's such a good point.
It's proportionately big. So don't dismiss ridiculously small things that we consider in our lives are proportionately ridiculously small, because in their lives there is that's catastrophic.
Very good point.
Yeah, that's the only thing. So yeah, listen to them because it hurts, you know, and you've got nothing else to worry about.
Well, while we've got you in tip mode, I always wonder, do you kind of find that you get people coming up to you in Sainsbury's and stuff asking you for property and renovation tips, and does it drive you up the wall? And B, do you have like your three top tips that you just say, oh, and reel them off to get rid of them every time? You know,
because all the questions are different. And okay. And
so you do get them. You get the questions.
A little bit, not much. I mean, you know, people are so nice. 99.9999% of people are gorgeous. I mean, that's just the rules in life, I've discovered. And so when people don't come up that much, when they do, they're always so charming and so lovely. And they're all slightly different questions. But I've got a friend who's a GP, another friend actually who's a dermatologist, and so I always ask them questions, and I'm just like, you know, and then I kind of go, oh, God, I'm so sorry, I shouldn't do that. And they go, no, that's what I studied for years. This is what I do, and this is what I love. So then I thought, I kind of think, you know, just in the same way as I send, you know, like, sort of, you know, here's my scabby finger off to James. I'm like, James, what's this? I've got this, like, slightly funny finger. What? And he's so patient about it. And I think, well, I love what I do, and why wouldn't I want to share that with people? You know, if you know about something, it's really exciting that people want to talk about a thing that you find exciting. So, no, I love it, actually. I really enjoy it.
I'm so glad to hear that other people have got a GP friend who they send pictures of scabby fingers to, because my friend Caroline is a GP, and I do feel like I take the mickey by, like, constantly sending her little WhatsApp messages like, oh, what's this? And should I be worried about this?
We all do it. We all do it. It's just it's like the Hippocratic Oath, I think. If you're a GP, you just have to suck up the fact that your mates are going to ask you about their fungal big toe.
Totally. They must hate the iPhone. I think for a GP, the iPhone's ruined their life, hasn't it? Because it's just the iPhone means that we can now, like, get a photo really quickly to them.
Yes.
Even if they're out to dinner.
Yes.
Well, my GP friend is in Canada, so she gets them at, like, 3 a.m. because I never bothered to do the time difference.
No, she's pinging back what the problem is. And then, I mean, everybody needs, like, a doctor friend, don't they, to go. Like, it's like, I mean, they're so useful.
So useful to have. Now, Sarah, you've said that you dreamed of having a large family, like in the Waltons, but that the reality wasn't quite as idyllic. What has got you through the less than perfect times over the years?
Rosé, probably.
Always good.
The less than perfect times, well, I mean, you know, I'm a kind of a high stress person, and I'm quite a kind of active person, and I take on way too many things and then wonder why I did. But you know, they're still magic. I have had moments where I have just, you know, they're very frustrating children. But you know, I go around, they now think it's really weird, but I tiptoe around at night when they're all there. I tiptoe around their bedrooms and I open the door and I go in and I look at them sleeping and I give them a kiss. And sometimes they wake up going, what are you doing, Mum? And I'm like, nothing. I was just like looking. And they're like, what are you doing? You're like a weird stalker. I'm like, no, I was just looking at you in your bed. And they're like, why are you in my bedroom? It's such a weird thing to do. And I'm like, no, just a kiss, good night. But actually, that's the magic moment is going around and seeing them sleeping in their beds, and that, you know, that where they are, you know, one isn't out and at a party, you're thinking, oh God, are you all okay? They're all in their beds and they're all nice and warm and snuggly in their beds, and then you can go around and kiss them all on the head, and then that is a good feeling.
Do you stay awake if one of them is at a party, or are you just asleep and not? Which sort are you?
I do both. It depends. I do go to sleep. I'm much more rational than I used to be. I'm much better than I was, because I kind of think I've somehow got to let this go, because, you know, my
cell phone's 19. Sleep.
You never otherwise. Sleep, ever, ever. So no, I don't. And I do really trust them all. And I trust them all they watch each other's backs a lot, which I love. They, you know they have to watch each other's backs. You know, you can't guarantee that you know, you can only hope that the rest of the world is looking after your prized possessions as much as you are, and pray that they are, and you know, that's all that you can do, isn't it? Try and be rational. Try not to be mental, but no, I don't stay awake.
We are popping on again to remind you that this episode of the Net Mamas podcast is brought to you by Aldi.
Switching to Aldi Mammy and Nappies can save parents more than £200 during the first 12 months alone. Don't forget to visit NetMums to claim your free pack of newborn nappies.
And let all your friends know too. Do you have one of those tracking apps where like you'll get like a little message to say, oh, Charlie's come home, or, you know, so each time one of them comes in from a party, you can just check your phone.
No, they do come and kiss me goodnight if they've gone to a party, though. They do come and they do, which is really wonderful. And they're very kind. We do have Find My Friends, which some people think is a bit odd, but I'm not trying to track them. I'm just trying to, you know, it starts me ringing them going, are you all right? Are you all right? I can just look at them and go, oh, they've got home, so I don't need to think about it anymore.
We're just getting into that here, because we're just getting into her going into town on her own and doing that stuff and having the conversation about, do we get the Find My Friends? Do we find out where she is? But I think it's okay, because she might get in a muddle and might need to be picked up or looked after. She's 12. That's okay.
I mean, I think, the way I see it is that it depends on how you use it, because you can make a rod for your own back. And it depends how much control you want. If you want to control your children and you want to know exactly where they are when they're there and at the right time, don't have a tracking app because they won't do what they say they're going to do, and they're not going to want to tell you everything, because half the fun of being a child is getting away with things they're not meant to do. And so if you're going to find that information out and then be cross, don't find out. But if you're going to accept that, you know, there's going to be a load of things you don't know about, but you know, it's just, don't ever think you can control your children. But if you just want to kind of keep an eye on not being in control, then it kind of works. But you can't control them because they're people, aren't they? Control yourself. That's it. Well, you can't even control yourself half the time, can you?
No chance. So how would you describe the kind of mum you are? I feel like I'm a different mum to each of my girls because they're quite different humans. Are you the same? Have you got four very different humans living under your roof and you're a different mum to all of them?
Yeah, actually. Yeah, they're really, really different. I'd call myself inconsistent. I would call myself bipolar. I don't mean to be. I guess I have trigger points, which I really struggle to, you know, we have little conversations about the kind of things that are the trigger points in our family that make it really difficult, and they still don't fix, and that really annoys me. But, you know, I largely, if they got out of bed without me nagging them, that's actually all I really, that would be it. That would be, that's all I really, you know, the
that's
rest
all
of
I
it,
want I can, in life.
Really, I mean, it's so boring going in and out, going, please, can you get out of bed? So you start off with a happy tune going and going, morning! And then the next time I'm like, hi, guys, okay, yeah, can you just jump out of bed, please? And then I'm in like, right, I've been in here 3 times, can you get out of bed? Then the next time I'm like, get like that, and then an hour later I'm like swearing, and then I'm just calling them
stealing duvets and screaming
I'm like some sort of bewitched woman like that. And then I just think, well, if you just got out of bed on your own, then none of that would happen, because you're still gonna have to get up, aren't you? It's not like you're not gonna have to get up. But we did find a really good solution. It was my eldest son, who's genius. He had to look after children because Graham and I were away and get them out of bed for school. And he just got a bucket of cold water and pulled the duvet back and tipped it on them. And they were really cross because the bed was wet. And I was like, Billy was in charge.
Oh my
And
goodness.
Billy just went, well, you should have got out of bed then. You've got to sleep in a wet bed. That's fine. Next day I got back, they were all sleeping in one bed because Billy had poured water everywhere, you know. I was like, well, you know, that kind of worked. I mean,
that's genius.
Good, isn't it?
It's so funny how the tables turn with parenting, though, isn't it? Because with having 4-year-old twins, if they stayed in bed all day, I would be the happiest person in the world. But instead, they're waking up at 6 a.m. and coming up and dragging me out of bed to come and watch Peppa Pig with them. So, yeah, it's just really interesting hearing you talking about dragging your kids out of bed.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. It comes. It certainly does. And it doesn't help with their kind of, you know, this like rock star status, because they seem to stay up all night. I go to bed. And I get up early because I like the morning, and they seem to think that they're, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm out of control. I'm no longer needed in that that home of like home of, you know, rockers.
Provide them with food and they, yeah, that's it, basically.
Well, they say,
or get the bucket of water ready.
Yeah, bucket of water. So these are the items you really need. You need, I always think...
Rosé.
Rosé, a lot. And you need They're a bit like dogs, really. If you exercise them well and you feed them well and you sleep them well, then they're quite nice. Whereas, you know, like if you've got a dog and they...
If a bit smelly.
A little bit smelly, yeah. But, you know, you know, there's a clothes peg and all that. But yeah, you can... I think if you don't exercise a child, particularly a boy, and then give it Coca-Cola, then it's a nightmare. You know, that's like literally... That's like leaving a puppy at home and going to work all day. That, I mean, the house would be trashed.
And, yeah. You know, eating the furniture.
Yes, yeah.
We've got a thing with my daughter, though, where she's at that age now where she can be in a funk and she can't recognise that she's in a funk. And if you ask her, she doesn't know what's wrong. It could be calories, it could be sleep, it could be hormones. So basically we've devised a code word. So if I go up to her and say, Chloe, you're being a bit flamingo. What she knows, she's being a wanker, basically. And it's a non-aggressive way for me to say, sort yourself out. And she can take it. And then she knows if I say she's being flamingo, she has to go and do some exercise of some form.
Clever.
Trampoline, roller skating. Yeah. Get out of my face and go and sort yourself out, basically. Yeah. And it works a treat because it's not aggressive. I'm not saying, you are being a pain in my butt. You're being a bit flamingo, and off she pops. And
that's so clever. So that's teaching
her.
It's
the only parenting thing I've got right thus far, listeners. But there we go.
To be honest, one thing every 10 years to get right, I think is quite good. Actually, that's quite an achievement.
Yeah,
I think that's very good.
I'm impressed. Yes. I'm impressed. Talking of achievements, Sarah, you've been with your husband, Graham, since you were 18, haven't you? What would you say is the secret to a long and happy relationship?
Rosé.
Rosé.
Bucket of water.
Yeah, pretty much. Rosé.
Thomas Peg.
Yeah, pretty much. Do you know what? I'm really lucky. You know, I married my best friend and he's quite good looking, actually, as well, which sort of helps because it's quite nice to be married to someone who's, you know, quite hottie. So that's kind
I have to say, when I watched your TV documentary, he is quite hot. I'll give you that.
He's quite
yummy.
He's not bad, at, you know, in the big scheme of things. I mean, I know you shouldn't be lookist, but he's always been quite good looking. But and he makes me laugh. And, you know, somehow or another, I kind of lucked out because, you know, he's made me laugh and he's loyal. I needed loyal. He's loyal. So, and then you can share everything if someone's that, can't you? So that's, I'm really... And he's so...
You picked a good un.
I kind of do. I mean, he's got loads of really bad sides to him. It drives me mad. But he's also incredibly artistic, which I'm in slight admiration of because I'm kind of like a, you know, I'm sort of like a driver forward of things. And I'm very slapdash and like, oh, that'll do, let's move on. And, but he's a... You know, whatever he touches in terms of the arts, he's really, you know, he's an incredibly accomplished fine artist. And, you know, if you ask him to do anything, like he designed our house, he writes the music with the band, like anything to do with the arts is exceptional if he touches it. And that makes me really lazy because I can say to him things like, we're building this TV studio at the moment, which is really exciting. But I rang him and just went, what are we going to call it? Could you come up with like a brand and then like a logo, please, by tomorrow? And he will, you know, he will. He'll just go, yeah, okay. And then like, that's not hard work for him. For me, I'd be like, ooh. He's like, you know, in terms of artistic anything, he's just like, yeah, no problem. Yeah, he's a proper creative.
So you're talking about the house and the new studio. You've obviously done a TV show about it and you've said that it will never be quite finished, which the fact you're now building a TV studio shows that there's something else that you're doing to the house. Which, do you have a favourite bit or do you have something that you still really want to do with the house?
Oh, God, millions of things, yeah. Loads. But then it was, you know, we bought a 220-acre ex-dairy farm, which had every tree had been taken down. And all the ponds filled in. So we've been putting ponds back and planting trees. And then we built a house. And the thing about a house, you know, we had a lot of experience, if I'm honest, of how good houses work and how how to make a great house. But it has no outbuildings, so there's nowhere to put anything. So you know, the lawnmower lives under a piece of plastic. And so we need those normal outbuildings you'd have with a house like that. That needs to happen one day. And then the farm is, you know, we're in the process of restoring that. We put in 5 kilometres of hedgerows back. And we've got a lot of farm buildings. So that's, you know, one of them, which we're just recladding at the moment because it was asbestos and it had holes in. So, and then if you're going to redo like a barn, you want to redo it really well. You don't want to do it badly. There's no point in doing a bad job. So I do sort of think everything, if you're going to do it properly. Do it really
it's
well.
Like the fourth bridge. Just keep
it's
going.
It. But I, you know, I'd be very bored sitting doing absolutely nothing.
I don't think you ever sit and do absolutely nothing from the amount of TV that you're in. And you're building a studio to be in more TV from your garden.
Well, partly that, and also partly I really want to have opportunity for young people locally. I'm really excited about that. So I'd like, I'd like people who live in our part of Somerset, young people, to not have to go to London to have opportunity, or Bristol. I'd like.
It's quite a creative area around there, isn't it, as well? So there's probably a lot of kids who really have those aspirations but don't want to necessarily go to London.
And they might go to London, but, you know, I don't know why we have to be the countryside doesn't have to be a sort of completely empty of opportunity for young people unless they want to work, you know, waiting in the local pub, which is kind of cool, but there should be other opportunities.
Such a good idea.
So that's the plan at the moment. So, yeah, more plans. Onward and upward, eh?
That's brilliant. Now, you talk in your book about your cancer diagnosis and treatment, and you've spoken a lot about it, you know, on TV interviews. What have you learned about yourself, would you say, since you had the diagnosis?
Gosh, what have I learned about myself? I've learned that I was more scared of cancer than I needed to be, and that cancer treatments come on, so you don't need to be as scared anymore. And other than that, that's about all I've learnt really from it. I knew I was lucky before. I did everything at 1,000 miles an hour before. I knew I was lucky. I still do everything at 1,000 miles an hour, and I still think I'm lucky. And now I've got more proof that I'm lucky. So, yeah, and I guess I've put to bed a whole load of things that I worried about, and I feel very privileged to have met a load of people that I wouldn't have met before. And I feel very privileged to have opened up my, you know, my box of ogres of fear and realised that that's in the past. You know, the way that cancer treatment was when my mother died is a piece of history. It's not a piece of present, and it's definitely not a piece of the future.
That's what I found really interesting about the documentary, actually, was you unpicking her treatment and how different her experience was to yours. Do you think that experience changed how you talked to your boys about health growing up and about your health?
Oh, I mean, it's coloured everything I've ever done, I think. You know, there's no question that it has coloured and shaped my life. But it's probably just made me... I don't know, maybe I would have been... Maybe I was going to do everything at 1,000 miles an hour anyway. Maybe it was nothing to do with that, but who knows what cause and effect it is. But it certainly made me really enjoy having my kids, because I am acutely aware of the fact that my mother didn't get to enjoy having me and my brother for more than 12 years for my brother and 10 years for me. And I think that's the saddest thing about her dying, is I think, God, that's the thing that makes me most sad, is I think, God, because you've kind of done lots of other things as an adult, haven't you? And that's really sad. But actually, the really awful thing is the thought that you wouldn't be there, not for your children, because they'll be okay, but with them, actually, with them. So, yeah, it has probably shaped how I talk to them and they know who Grandma Anne is. She's a very real person in their lives. And I think that was my testament to her, is to say, you know, if we talk about you, if you ask my children who Grandma Anne is, they go, oh, God, it's Mum's mum. And if they wouldn't say about her being dead, they'd just go, oh, that's Mum's mum, yeah, yeah. And if you ask what she was like, they would tell you things about her because they know about her. She's a real person. She's not like a piece of history. She's like a person.
Was writing the book therapeutic for you at all? I mean, there's so much. I mean, you go right back to, you know, through the years, pre-kids. You talk about so many of different experiences.
Yeah, it was very therapeutic because it made me sort of look at things again and kind of go, oh, yeah. It made me like, it was like a filing system. You file it into order of what matters a bit. And at some things I had a bit out of proportion. I was like, yeah, that's a bit ridiculous. So it did sort of, but more, the unfinished business in my life, the things I really like to, I'd like to be the voice in a children's film, cartoon. I really want to do that. And I'd like to write a children's book. And this was a part of the journey of trying to unpick what it is about my life that, I mean, I've written like housey books before, but I thought that's where I want to go. So I'll do this. And then, yeah, this is part of the journey to conquering writing. That's to me.
First question, do you have your children's book in your brain already?
No, I've got too many. That's why I've got about 500. And then they all intermingle. I'm like, so this taught me to maybe be able to, it didn't teach me, it helped me work out how you make a structure, because you can have there's a million ideas, but how do you define it into some, you know, with some rules and chapters and, yeah. So I'm a bit closer.
And do you want to be a villain or a goodie when you voice the kids? What do you want to be?
Oh, I think I'd rather be the villain. I want to be, yeah. Puss in Boots, I'd like to be the villain in that. You know, do you know what I mean? It would be really fun. Like,
oh, that does sound good.
Yeah, probably the villain. Or any of them, to be honest. I don't mind being the, you know, there's always a dippy one, isn't there? That's like, ooh, 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 that loves everyone and is all a bit like, ooh. I think that would be quite a fun character as well.
My best friend's brother-in-law is the voice of Wallace. Which one does it speak, Wallace or Gromit? Wallace speaks, Wallace, doesn't he? Gromit's the dog. So he is the voice of Wallace. And every now and again, when you're around for dinner, he just goes into Wallace and it's like, it Mad totally bit. Like, I'm Mad like, no, you're Ben. You can't, that's what? Right. This is what it is.
That's so cool. Yeah.
I mean, that is on cool levels. Obviously, yeah. It'd be really brilliant to. Yeah.
That's where you're aiming, Sarah. Come on.
I mean, I'm not going to be an X Factor and a superhero, so I might as well be that because that is really cool.
aim high. Sarah, in your book, you give the most amazing tip. I just loved it. I think it's genius, which is never view a property on a beautiful, sunny day. Is that a mistake that you've made many times?
Well, no, I've sort of learned over the years, but yeah, you should never do that because you will end up living in a dustbin and that you bought for like £500,000 going, why did I do that? Like,
because in the depths of winter.
On a beautiful day, everything is beautiful and you can be kind of tricked. You need to go back in the rain. Always go back in the rain. And it's really miserable with a small thin t-shirt in the rain. So you're a bit cold going, ooh. And then if it's still
with a small child moaning at you saying, I'm hungry the whole time.
Yeah, and then feed them loads and loads of opal fruits, except the Starburst now. Lots of sweets on the way.
There'll always be opal fruits.
It's ridiculous, silly renaming nonsense. So feed them loads of sweets and then if they wet themselves on the way, great. And then you've got the full experience, like full. Yeah.
And if you still want to buy it, at the end of all of that, it's your dream home.
It's a good
one. Yeah.
well, never mind a beautiful day. I think this has been a beautiful chat.
Thank you so much,
Sarah, for chatting to us today.
Thanks so much for asking. Thank you.
What fun. Thank you. Bye.